Will you help support the scientists working to disseminate the evidence about intelligent design in nature? Go to evolutionnews.org and donate now to support Evolution News and our other initiatives in the coming year. 10 years ago today, an activist federal judge in Pennsylvania tried to kill intelligent design by court order. In Kitzmiller v. Dover, Judge John Jones declared that teaching about intelligent design was unconstitutional because intelligent design was religion rather than science. Contrary to what Darwinists thought would happen, it wasn't over after Dover. Thanks to the support from independent-minded thinkers like you, intelligent design did not die after Dover. Instead, we produce new books and films advancing the argument and have helped to fund and support the work of scientists and scholars researching the evidence for intelligent design. We in the intelligent design movement don't depend on tax dollars. We do depend on voluntary help from people like you. As we progress toward the 20th anniversary of the Center for Science and Culture next year, we are preparing a stream of new books, scientific research, documentaries, and more to push the debate forward. But we can't bring these things to completion without your support. Will you take a stand against censors like Judge Jones and help us continue and expand the debate over intelligent design in 2016? Please donate now to support the work of intelligent design. Go to evolutionnews.org and donate now. That's evolutionnews.org.
Welcome to ID the Future. I'm Sarah Chaffee with the Center for Science and Culture. Nearly 10 years ago, on December 20th, 2005, Judge John E. Jones ruled in Kitzmiller v. Dover that intelligent design is religion, not science. His decision was based on faulty reasoning and misrepresentation of intelligent design. As we approach the 10-year anniversary of Dover, listen to a recent lecture by Casey Luskin, who covered the trial for Evolution News and his role as then Science Education Policy Program Officer. In this final part, he discusses Judge Jones's judicial activism.
So let's talk a little bit about Judge Jones's judicial activism. This, to me, is one of the most kind of amusing parts of the ruling. He made this bizarre statement in the Kitzmiller versus Dover case. I've never seen anything like this in any ruling. It's sort of a preemptive strike against people who would say that his ruling was activist. And he said, those who disagree with our holding will likely mark it as the product of an activist judge. If so, they will have erred, as this is manifestly not an activist court. What a bizarre statement that he's trying to tell people, look, we're not an activist court. I'm not an activist court. Well, Judge Jones, methinks thou doth protest too much. This is one of the weirdest remarks I've ever seen in a ruling. And why are you so worried about people thinking you're an activist judge? Well, maybe it's because Judge Jones went way beyond the normal scope of the judiciary in his ruling, okay? So again, let's look at some ways that Judge Jones did this. Let's review the Lemon Test very briefly. The Lemon Test that says that, first of all, a statute must have a secular legislative purpose. And second, the principal or primary effect must be one that neither advances nor inhibits religion. So, according to Edwards versus Aguillard, if the law was enacted for the purpose of endorsing religion, then no consideration of the second or third criteria of Lemon is necessary. Okay? So, essentially, if you find a religious purpose, you do not need to look at the effect of the law and ask whether or not its primary effect is to advance religion. So, under this principle from Edwards, Judge Jones should have stopped his analysis and his ruling as soon as he found that the Dover School Board acted under religious motives. And as I said earlier, I think he had very clear evidence of religious motives from the Dover School Board. But Judge Jones didn't do that. Instead, he engaged in very sweeping questions in his effect analysis under the effect prong of the Lemon Test, where he tried to rule on expansive social, scientific, and even religious questions that are unnecessary or irrelevant even to his case. Some of these questions include, how do we define science? Is ID science? Could the type 3 secretory system form a precursor to the bacterial flagellum? Is the blood clotting cascade irreducibly complex? Can evolutionary processes produce new information? Or does evolution conflict with religion? Each of these questions were unnecessary for Judge Jones in this case. All he needed to do was to find clear evidence of religious motives from the Dover School Board, which he did, and that should have been the end of his case under the precedent of Edwards versus Aguilar. And by the way, Judge Jones cited Edwards versus Aguilar as an authority all over his ruling, except in this particular case, he ignored that precedent when it instructed him to stop his analysis after finding religious motives. So again, Judge Jones said, those who disagree with our holding will likely mark it as the product of an activist judge. If so, they will have erred, as this is manifestly not an activist course. And I would say, we need to see actions, not words. I mean, you can say you're not an activist all day long, but if your actions basically match the textbook definition of judicial activism, then that's activism, okay? Now, in a later interview, Judge Jones sort of said that people will say that I'm an activist just because they disagree with my ruling, okay? Well, this is not why we're saying he's an activist. We're saying he's an activist because his actions match textbook legal scholar definitions of judicial activism. So let's look at another example. In another situation, Judge Jones actually said he hoped that, quote, his ruling could serve as a primer for school boards and other people who are considering this issue. So essentially what Judge Jones is doing here is he is trying to influence parties outside his case. He wants his ruling to not just influence the Dover School Board and the parents who sued them trying to get ID banned. He wants his ruling to influence other people elsewhere who are considering the same issue of teaching intelligent design. That is the definition of judicial activism, where you are trying to sort of serve as a broad policymaker around the whole country rather than simply settling the issue before you in the case. So when we say that Judge Jones was a judicial activist, this is not just a meaningless epithet which implies we just disagree with what he said. No, this is a term that is well understood in scholarly legal circles, and it's applied to judges who succumb to the temptation to, quote, increase their impact as policymakers. This is a quote from a legal scholar book. And so when they do this, they're engaging in judicial activism. Judge Jones, by his own admission, wanted to be a policymaker. He wanted his ruling to influence other school boards and other people elsewhere around the country. Basically, what legal scholars say is that judicial activism tends to displace other branches of government or other institutions in society that are better equipped to resolve a dispute. Okay, so what am I talking about? In the United States, obviously we have our three branches of government. We have the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. According to our American form of government, the legislative branch makes the laws, the executive branch executes the laws, and the judicial branch gets to interpret the law. They don't make the law. And so the legislative branch, in this case, they would be the branch, so to speak, that would be setting the law when it comes to a school board curriculum. So school boards essentially belong to the legislative branch, in that when a school district adopts a curriculum, it is enacting a law or a policy that dictates what has to be taught in public schools. Now, a court has the right and actually the obligation and the authority to interpret that and to decide whether or not a school board curriculum violates the First Amendment. So if Judge Jones finds that Dover's ID policy violates the First Amendment, it establishes religion, he has every right and authority to do that. There's nothing wrong with the fact that Judge Jones did that in this case. But what Judge Jones tried to do was he tried to go further and decide whether or not that is even a good curriculum. And that is a no-no for federal courts. They're not supposed to decide whether or not a curriculum is a good curriculum or whether or not maybe a particular scientific concept ought to be included in a curriculum. All they can do is decide whether or not a concept is religion as respects the First Amendment. All they can do is decide whether or not a concept in the curriculum establishes religion. And there's a very nice statement of this policy of judicial restraint that Judge Jones didn't follow in the Smith v. Board of School Commissioners of Mobile County case from the 11th Circuit. And here's what the court said in that case. It said, the wisdom of an educational policy or its efficiency from an educational point of view is not germane to the constitutional issue of whether that policy violates the Establishment Clause. This is very good law right here. This is very good legal reasoning. But Judge Jones didn't just decide whether or not the Dover School Board violates the Establishment Clause. He went into a lengthy analysis of whether ID is good science, whether it's been refuted by Darwinian evolution, whether or not it is an accurate description of the world around us. That is not what a federal court is supposed to be doing. It was not Judge Jones's place to decide whether or not ID or Darwinian evolution is correct. It was his job to decide whether or not the Dover School Board policy violates the Establishment Clause. And the question of whether or not ID is a good idea as a scientific concept, whether or not it's a good idea to include it in the curriculum, or whether or not it's better or worse than Darwinian evolution when it comes to the evidence, none of that is germane to the constitutional issue of whether Dover's ID policy violates the Establishment Clause. But Judge Jones did not get this distinction. And that's why he went into a lengthy analysis of whether or not ID is good science, not just whether it's science, but whether it's good science, whether it's true or not. And we'll talk, by the way, in just a minute about some of the scientific flaws in Judge Jones's ruling. So talking about the principle of judicial restraint, this goes all the way back to a famous U.S. Supreme Court case called Village of Euclid versus Ambler Realty Company back in the 1920s. And the Supreme Court on this case has been cited many times over the years. The Supreme Court said, in the realm of constitutional law, especially, this court has perceived the embarrassment which is likely to result from an attempt to formulate rules or decide questions beyond the necessities of the immediate issue. It is preferred to follow the method of a gradual approach to the general by a systematically guarded application and extension of constitutional principles to particular cases as they arise, rather than by out-of-hand attempts to establish general rules to which future cases must be fitted. Now, this is the U.S. Supreme Court saying this. They have the right to be the supreme law of the land. Judge Jones was from the lowest level of the federal courts. If there's ever a time where a court is supposed to use judicial restraint and only try to settle the immediate necessities of the issues before them in a case, it's when you're a federal trial court judge. Instead, Judge Jones tried to settle all of these broad questions. How do we define science? Is ID science? Is the type 3 secretory system a precursor to the flagellum? He even tried to decide whether evolution conflicts with religion. So what the Supreme Court recommended for judicial restraint in this case is pretty much the opposite of what Judge Jones did. And I would say that one of the most dangerous parts of Judge Jones' rulings is that it is a threat to religious liberty. It's not just judicial activism and bad constitutional law, it's a threat to religious liberty. So here's an interesting statement that Judge Jones said. He said, both defendants and many of the leading proponents of ID make a bedrock assumption which is utterly false. Their presupposition is that evolutionary theory is antithetical to a belief in the existence of a supreme being and to religion in general. Now, does Judge Jones have the right to personally believe that it's utterly false to say that evolution conflicts with religion? Of course. If he personally wants to believe that evolution has no conflict with religion and that it's utterly false to believe that evolution conflicts with religion, that's fine. I mean, he's a citizen of this country. He has every right to believe that. But as an officer of a U.S. government court, of a federal court, he has no business going around trying to address the question of whether evolution conflicts with religion or whether it's utterly false if people say that their religious beliefs do conflict with evolution, okay? This is the exact opposite of what a federal court is supposed to say. Here's a beautiful statement from the U.S. Supreme Court. Again, the field of religion and the law can be very murky and unclear, but this is one area where it's really, really, really clear. And essentially what the Supreme Court says is that a court should never say what is orthodox in religion. Here's what the court said. If there is any fixed star in our constitutional constellation, it is that no official, high or petty, can prescribe what shall be orthodox in politics, nationalism, religion, or other matters of opinion. But here we have a federal court judge saying that it is utterly false to believe that evolution is antithetical to belief in the existence of a supreme being and to religion in general. I mean, look, whether or not Judge Jones is right, we can debate that all day long, but a federal court has no business prescribing what is orthodox in matters of whether evolution conflicts with religion. But yet Judge Jones got this basic principle of constitutional law wrong. I wouldn't even call this a rookie error. I mean, this is an error that really no federal court judge should ever make. So it's very interesting because of all this, we saw that actually some leading anti-ID legal scholars were very critical of Judge Jones's ruling. And in fact, a leading anti-ID legal scholar named Jay Wexler, he's a professor of law at Boston University, he's written a number of law review articles in the technical legal literature critiquing, he argues against the teaching of ID. But here's what he said in a Law Review article published about the Kitzmiller ruling. He says, the part of Kitzmiller that finds ID not to be science is unnecessary, unconvincing, not particularly suited to the judicial role, and perhaps even dangerous both to science and to freedom of religion. Wow. Wow. To have a leading anti-ID legal scholar say this, and by the way, he agrees with Judge Jones's overall view that ID is unconstitutional to teach in public schools, okay? But he says that this big part of the Dover ruling that finds ID not to be science is unnecessary, unconvincing, not particularly suited to the judicial role, and perhaps even dangerous to both science and to freedom of religion. I mean, you don't find a legal scholar saying stuff like that when they agree with the fundamental position of a judge very often. And so when a lot of folks will say, well, Judge Jones, he was appointed by George W. Bush, as if somehow that's supposed to mean that I guess he has to agree with every ideological view of the president that appointed him. Well, here we have somebody who very much agrees with Judge Jones's overall ideology about intelligent design, but very strongly disagrees with his ruling on whether ID is science. So that's very striking, and I think that a lot of the activism and a lot of the overstretch that Judge Jones did in his ruling helps explain why somebody like Jay Wexler would have said this, okay?
That was Casey Luskin, lecturing on Judge Jones's judicial activism and the Kitzmiller v. Dover ruling. In the decades since Dover, intelligent design has flourished. For a free, short documentary on intelligent design, and a free digital book about the Dover trial, as well as other resources, visit informationenigma.com. That's informationenigma.com. I'm Sarah Chaffee for the Center for Science and Culture. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2015. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.